ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। On this most auspicious occasion of Shri Krishna Janmashtami, what follows is a series of talks on the occasion of Lord Krishna's divine appearance, the first being a small introduction to the topic. So I'll be brief, my time is still 10:15, and after that we will have Rohini Priya Prabhu, Gauranga Prabhu and Gorgopal Prabhu giving a wide array of different humors or tastes of Krishna Leela.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Juta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha.
As the very name of today's festival suggests, it's Janmashtami. Ashtami is the eighth day, and there is Janma. So, simply put, it's God's birthday. And we have come here to wish Him a very happy birthday. We wish Him a happy birthday, we give Him gifts, and we expect a party in return. And our party is that we fast till midnight. Why do we do that? So many such questions come in the mind of those who are not aware of the intricacies of Lord Krishna's appearance. Who is Krishna? And at least the Hare Krishnas, I'm not saying others too, but at least the Hare Krishnas say He's God. So today, what happened today? Well, He was born today. He was born to whom? He was born to His parents. And who are His parents technically? Well, they are devotees. Where do they take their own birth from? Their parents or their parents, and ultimately they are God's children. So it sounds strange that you worship someone as God's father and mother, and who in His own right is also God's children or is also God's child. Like, we were having a communication seminar in Mayapur, and one devotee was relating how in Ireland they had to go to the local county sheriff for permission for Jagannath Rath Yatra. So he said, you tell me first of all, what exactly is this? You're going to sing in the streets? dance, and you're going to pull a cart. And what are these three? She said, this is God, this is a brother and sister. And he said, what? So imagine, in India, it is becoming strange to relate to God as having a brother, father, mother, sister. And to many so-called intelligent people, this whole thing smacks of something mundane. You people are putting a mundane relationship unto God. He need not have fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters. Inevitably, what happens in our scenario, father and mother, they quarrel, brothers and sisters, they quarrel, and there is a, like, ask anyone in the street, how are your folks at home? And you say, nothing special about them. what's the big deal about me having a family? So then who is God? God is someone who doesn't have any origin. That has to be the definition of God. He doesn't have anyone who is his source. Otherwise that is God then. A typical philosophical exercise, in fact one person who teaches philosophy wrote a book called The Philosophy Gym, where you do philosophical gymnastics. And this person put forward this objection that who holds the universe? And he talks of different cultures. In Vedic culture, there is a conception of Diggaja. If you have heard this term, Dig is direction, Gaja is the elephant. So there are elephants who are holding different directions on their head. So he says, well, okay, good. It solves one big question, that all his directions and his planets, they are held by an elephant or elephants, four of them. And he then says, okay, then but where do they stand? Well, there's a giant tortoise. That's very good. Another problem solved. But where does the tortoise stand then? So therefore, Western philosophers, it's a bit of a anomaly, Western and philosophy, but still, according to this standard, philosophy is love of truth. You have to have love, philo, and so forth. You have to have truth. We don't need to deride them. There are equally astute, powerful mental speculators in India also. In fact, much before them. We had many before them. And that's why when you read Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada always strongly attacks. Don't speculate. Don't speculate. If you know something, say. If you don't, shut up. Like once, Prabhupada was having a morning walk. And there was one word which came up. It was in Britain. And Prabhupada said, what is the meaning of that? And the devotees were like, mum. I said, you don't know? You don't know? And Harishori Prabhu, he said, well, I'm not actually sure, but I think. Prabhupada said, if you don't know, then you are a fool. Ignorant. And when you think after you don't know, then you are a rascal. So, I was happy. You at least have one definition of what this so common theme in Prabhupada's language. Fools and rascals, fools and rascals. So, fool, don't remain a fool. Acharya van purusho veda. Go to an acharya. That's why in India there are so many acharyas. You might say that how come all the acharyas have come in India only? Because it is dharma bhumi. It's of course. Like if you go to the capital city of a country and say all the main offices are here in this one small city, why is that? That's how it makes easy for bureaucratic control or for ease of operation. If you go to the head office and say, all the big officers of this company are here. Of course, they have to be there. Similarly, India is the place which is concerned with religion, with truth, with love of God. So over the last so many hundreds of years, it was in the 16th century that one Western monk, holy man, he said God has to be the supreme designer and he has to be the supreme cause. And at that time, watches were in vogue. Watches, not the wristwatch type, but those used to dangle from your coat pocket or something like that. But watches were there, available. So this man, William Paley, for those of you who are interested, he was a holy man, he was a sincere person, and he said, if somebody walking on the street comes across a watch, or at Chopardi Beach you go, and then you kick some sand, and suddenly a watch surfaces, and you say, hey, it works. So do you feel that because of a certain constellation and due to the action of the waves against the sand at a particular time with a particular force and watches grow from that? Obviously not. Your most logical, most simple conclusion would be someone here took out his wristwatch and forgot to take it back or it slipped through his wrist or whatever, or slipped through a bag or something. So he said, watch here, lying here, a watch, means there has to be a watchmaker somewhere. Now that watchmaker may not be across the street. If you see some made in Switzerland, of course, that watch address, that maker's address has to be traced back to Switzerland. So he said that a design means a designer. Creation means a creator. And people said, very good. We are convinced. And I was, when I was reading that, I was really thinking, how can you challenge such a argument that a watch means there has to be a watchmaker? But just imagine when Prabhupada says that Kali Yuga means low, low, low class intelligence. Just about 250 years after this simple person, he was not trying to be famous, he was not trying to be a philosopher or whatever. He just said that if you see some creation and if you see that it, once you are sure it is created, once you are sure it has some design, it's very safe to assume there could be some designer. And then comes a great Darwin and he says, no. You might see something which is very intricate. And it has come from some random sampling. It has come from some simple. So complexities can come from simple things. So today, the Western type of philosophers, whether they stay in the Eastern part of the world or in the West, they say, not a very good argument. Because we see sometimes complex things come up. And what kind of complex things? That they don't define all the time. But they have this fear. The moment you say God exists, like the moment some thieves feel that this part of town is safe, we can go to any house, break in, try to do something. And suddenly one of them says in their code language, whistle, which means there are police around, strikes fear in their heart. So therefore, why is God so unpopular today? Because immediately there is fear in the mind that now I can't go on with my nonsense. So Kamsa, the son of Ugrasen, who had imprisoned Vasudev and Devaki, he is typical of atheistic rulers who feel that might is right. Might, you have strength, and then it's okay. You're all right. So he had imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki, and he was very frightened that some voice, unembodied voice, had proclaimed, "Kamsa, you fool, you don't know? The eighth child of your sister is going to be the cause of your death." So poor Vasudeva and Devaki, they were miserable in prison. One after another, Devaki gave birth to children. And as soon as the child was born, normally babies, when they are born, they start crying. Not just crying, shrieking loudly. And Kamsa would know, he would take that. And just near their cell, he would dash it against a rock. Prabhupada writes very extensively in that purport about mercy and about understanding. Prabhupada said, asuras are those who could kill children, who could kill cows, kill brahmanas, kill old people, kill women, without any impunity. And he says, two things, killing of cows and killing of children, killing of babies. It's already going on. Babies are killed even in their mother's womb. And cows are killed for so-called food problem. Yesterday one person was telling me that when he was in college, which was about 10-15 years ago, beef would be available only in some 5-star and 7-star outlets in Bombay. And he said, now, at the place where he stays in Bandra, on the street you have sandwiches or other things, burgers, and it says there, beef. So we Indians, we have decided to accept wholesale Western technology, Western way of life, their dress, their food, and everything has its price. The Western so-called way of life is based on cow killing. There is no other choice. You have to accept. First of all, there is no God. And if at all there is a God, then he is not in control. And even if he has in control, even if he is a little bit in control, we should be doing something to take that control in our hands. So that's how progressively that mindset goes. So today in our short time, we shall be trying to see who are these devotees who see God as their child. Now technically one cannot be God's father or God's mother. It would be wrong to say that. When you say, who is God? Is Parampita. And who is this? This is God's Pita. How do you explain that? So therefore, Krishna is described by Rupa Goswami in the beginning verse of his great contribution to Vaishnava theology and philosophy, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He calls Krishna as Akhila Rasamrita Murti. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his English of that time, he calls Krishna the emporium of all rasas. Nowadays we don't see emporium. We have, now we can call Krishna as the super mall of all rasas. in today's language. Like, what's a big mall? Now, we don't look at these things which are lying on the Tulsi Pipe Road or these streets of Bombay. Some of our devotees, they go to the West and they say, there are malls which are as big as 5 football grounds. In order to go inside the mall, you have small vehicles. Because how will you walk all that distance? You could get lost in that, practically. So Krishna is Akhila Rasa, not just 1, 2, but Akhila Rasa Amrita, and these are non-dying. We too experience Rasa here, that's why we are in this world. Rupa Goswami says, everybody does something when there is some Rasa involved. When the Rasa stops, you change the activity. Prabhupada gives a simple example. A merchant, businessman, he gets up early in the morning, goes to his place of work, does some buying, selling, and he's busy. If you ask him, could you get some time for some satsang? He says, no, I'm very busy. What are you busy in? I'm busy in earning money. So that is one particular activity. And very soon, or at least to our understanding, at the outset of that activity, you feel it has no rasa in it. And then you start thinking of something else. So maybe if I have enough money, I can go on a vacation. So now I am busy earning money because that's the rasa I get. And when I go to a vacation, I spend money like anything. That's the rasa I get there. And soon the money stops there when I am on vacation. So then I say, oh, now I have to go back and immediately start working. So this is called bhoga tyaga, bhoga tyaga. You do something, then you change it, you do something, you change it. And this change you feel is part of life. Very smugly you assume that this is what life is. You say, of course, you know, if I run out of cash, I have to go and earn money again. But here Rupa Goswami asks you a question, what is in that activity of yours that makes you change it? You see, is it not natural that you have to change? And he says, no. Let me introduce you to a personality with whom you have some interaction. Once you begin that, there is no change needed. And that is Krishna. So one answer to somebody's question that, don't you get bored chanting Hare Krishna every day? And Prabhupada said, no. We may be engaged in Krishna's service for 24 hours. But still there is no fatigue. Of course, in the beginning stage, because one thinks of these activities as fatigue causing or whatever, then we get it. It's all in the mind. Sometimes, for mundane activities, people assume something like, this is spiritual, and they go on. People can give their lives for their country, patriots. And of course, as a fruit of that, they are born again in the same country, because that's what they love. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam. In the next life, they may not be patriots, because now, once bitten, twice shy. Now they know, the only result of this patriotism is you are born here. But if you think of Krishna and then you die, then you are transformed to somewhere near Krishna. And you can get the chance to have that rasa again. So, to begin with, we are trying to understand today what is Vatsalya rasa. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu gives a very nice definition. When ecstatic love solidifies in parenthood. First of all, this love has to be ecstatic. Ecstasy is not what the Western people think of it as. Ecstasy, plain simple, is there is some bliss, there is some extra jubilation, ecstatic love. To put it properly, not official love. Like, why are you going to the temple? Why? Because there is a temple and there is Janmashtami today and my parents are forcing me or my wife or husband is forcing me. So this is official. You just do it. And in India, Hindus are very expert at doing that. We can very much mask our disdain, our no liking for something. But ecstatic love is something where if you are told, please stop that. And you say, oh, really? Why? Like many devotees, even after a small kirtan, you feel, keep it going. Or after hearing Krishna katha, like the Vayam Tuna Vitrupyama, the sages of Naimisharanya, they are saying to Suta Goswami, we are never satiated. We na vitrupyama. It's not like we are saying, enough of Krishna katha now. No, it's never like that. So what is the secret? Because Krishna is Akhila Rasamrita Murti. So there is one kind of devotion where you go to God and say, please give me my daily bread. Please give me my daily necessities. And Prabhupada says, it is good. It's not bad to go and ask Krishna for something. Who doesn't ask Krishna? If we just want to think from that point of view. There was a man and he was living in a village and one day he was thinking, I would like to see the king. I am a simple man, poor man, I beg sometimes. The king is a big man. And he was very swabhimani. He said, now I want to stop my begging. So he went to the landlord. The landlord took him to some other higher person. Finally they came to the king and he was told that the king is in puja. He's doing his puja. So he said, what for? He said, well, he asked God for good rains, for good treasury, good soldiers, no armed uprising happening. So he was wondering that even he begs. I mean, why? If I have to beg, I should go to a person who doesn't beg. Why should I just go to a better beggar than me? And this is intelligence. This is intelligence. Those, like, why do we discourage people from performing demigod worship? People say, but demigods are powerful, they are good people, they may give you what they want, what you want. But the fact is that they are just people who, okay, you want something, I'll give you. So what do you mean? You give me, I will get it done. That means he doesn't create it. Krishna says, in mayyava vihitan hitan. They give all the things you need by taking from me. So then, like an intelligent merchant, you say, why not remove the middlemen? Exactly. Middlemen have their commission, their business, and they do so many other things. They might adulterate it, they might do so many other things. Go to the manufacturer straight. So when one person intelligently goes to Krishna, and not in a mood of, please give me this, please give me that. That by definition Krishna is giving. The Upanishads described God as one who is fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. How many breaths we have taken today? Fresh air breaths. How much water we have drank up till now? How much food we have taken? Did we ever say even thank you? We thought, well, food has to be there, water has to be there. But if you go to an underwater excursion, you have your, it's called scuba diving or something, and then you take two oxygen cylinders and they say, that will be 1,000 rupees each. You say, oh, costly. What about the oxygen freely flowing outside? Who made it? So, today science and technology makes us dull. We feel all this sweet, pure sweet water available in plenty by nature's courtesy. But you bottle it and man puts a price on it. So Krishna is fulfilling all his necessities since time immemorial. So one higher level of understanding is, I want to give God something. Is it possible? Somebody without ecstatic love, if he comes before Krishna, says, what can I give you? Take the richest man in the world and you say that, I want to give you a pen, please take it. Now if he is modest and if he is understanding, he may say, okay, keep it there. Is he impressed by your pen or something like that? What does it take to impress him? Coming to some more practical affairs. Ecstatic love. So what is this ecstatic love? This ecstatic love is, ideally speaking, it's a gift. You can't practice it. It's not a science or an art or a craft. It's a gift. It's an endowment. You see someone trying to practice and then you come and help. So Krishna, who is a reservoir of or is a storehouse of all these rasas, when he sees some devotee trying to give me something, Krishna reciprocates. Krishna agrees, okay. You want to give me something? I'll accept. How will he accept? If Krishna remains in front of him and says, I am the source of everything that exists, everything comes from me, then it's sort of an irregularity. Please try to understand. So Krishna, he doesn't take the position of the all-giving, all-knowing Supreme Lord. He has to respect to that love's request and becomes an object which is just suitable for that love. So we will begin our understanding in the cell of Kamsa, Kamsa's prison house, where Vasudeva and Devaki are imprisoned. The eighth child is about to be born. And Vasudeva, he is seeing suddenly the divine form of Lord Narayan, the four-armed form in front of him. He and Devaki are practically at a loss for words. He is so beautiful, he is effulgent, he is reassuring. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes, Devaki was not pregnant in the way mundane people, they give birth to children. The Lord first of all appeared in Vasudeva's heart. Then he got transferred to Devaki's heart. Then he was in Devaki's womb. And also he was outside. So this is the first understanding that for Krishna, there is nothing outside and nothing inside. Tade jati tan nai jati tad dure tad vantike tadantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasyasya bhayataha. For Krishna, there is nothing like, this is the Upanishad, there is nothing like inside, outside. So then when we see Vasudeva's prayers, these prayers, this is I am talking of the first birth of Lord Krishna, third chapter of 10th canto, where Vasudeva's prayers, they exhibit what kind of lofty philosophy he knows. He says, my Lord, you are the creator of this, you are the creator of that, the Mahatattva. It's heavy philosophy. Then Devaki, she describes Krishna as, you are the master of the three modes, everybody is under your control. But slowly, just by, who are they? They are ecstatic, Vatsalya Ras lovers of Krishna. So by seeing Krishna in his godhood, in Vatsalya Ras, Krishna cannot play God. If he plays God, then where is the question of giving him something? So the initial prayers, they suggest that grand, majestic understanding of God. And in the last line of a prayer, she says, so my Lord, please hide yourself or otherwise Kamsa will kill you. You may say, just a few lines ago you were saying that he is beyond time and he can kill death even. So how can one tiny Kamsa can kill him? So now the love is acting. So in one sense, we can safely say that those who are Krishna Bahirmukh, they don't know who Krishna is. And those who are so much Krishna Antarmukh, they also don't know who Krishna is. But one is out of hate, out of rebellion, and the other is out of love. So we only have two choices. Either you respect Krishna, either you have a relationship with Krishna as a lover, and that's what we are here to be trained up for. When Prabhupada was asked, what will please you, Srila Prabhupada? And that time there were book distributors, people who had erected temples, fundraised, so many things. Nice service they have done. And they thought Prabhupada would choose one of the particular services which I also like, or Prabhupada has stressed. Prabhupada said, I would be happy if you love Krishna. And just like we are individuals here, although we come, we are bound as one, one society, one group of devotees, still we will remain individuals. We will have our individual tastes. So Vasudeva and Devaki, they are ecstatic lovers of Krishna in Vatsalya Ras. And these prayers, slowly and slowly, in just one chapter you see the whole thing transforming. Obviously, if Devaki and Vasudeva have given birth to a child, what is the first thing a mother has? Concern for her child. Fear. Although that fear is not necessary. So if some strong logician goes to Devaki and says, this prayer is incorrect. He is God, you know. No! Later, much later in Vrindavan, it happened like that. Coward men came to Nanda Maharaj and said, we had a small ishtagosti. And he said, oh really? And we had some kind of discussion. And our conclusion is, your son is God. Nanda Maharaj said, very well. What about this person you call God? I have to see to it that he doesn't cause so much mischief every day. He lies through his teeth. He is so mischievous. Every time, every day, I get complaints about some kind of misbehavior. And I have to train him up. He is to be the later leader of this community here. So he says, fine, God, you worship him as God. That strong barrier of Vatsalya Ras, no logic or reasoning can penetrate. Their love is built like a tank. And logic is like shooting peas at it. What's the difference? Like for us, many times, our dullness is like a tank. And so many verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, they just don't pierce, we don't get it. But we have to keep on trying. So to begin with, ecstatic love, when it becomes solidified as parenthood, it's called Vatsalya. There is this word we always will come across in Prabhupada's book, Vatsa. Vatsa means a child. Vatsa means a calf. And Vatsalya is that sweet relationship between a cow and a calf. So something like that. 10th canto, 8th chapter, 45th verse, Rupa Goswami quotes in the Bhaktisamrita Sindhu. He says that he is trying to give us an understanding of what is the state of affairs in Vatsalya Ras. He says, that person whom the Vedas described as king of heaven. I was surprised. Why in the Vedas, heaven is stressed so much? Because basically, Vedic language is meant for the heaven-bound people. Those who want to have a good life now, do some good things, and also good enjoyment in heaven. The Upanishads, little higher texts of the Vedas, dealing with philosophy and other things, they describe God as the impersonal Brahman. Philosophers describe God as the supreme male, Purusha. The yogis, they describe God as a super soul. Devotees describe God as the supreme personality of Godhead. Now this is the highest. And then comes Mother Yashoda. She says, he is my son. That's all. That's all. He is my son. So this is the Vatsalya Ras. Rupa Goswami quotes a very nice verse in Bhaktisamrita Sindhu. When the cowherd community was discussing Krishna's, what happened to Krishna? In fact, Vrindavan, Brajavasis, they cannot but talk of Krishna. They have to. Compulsion. You may say, I don't like, or I like, or this or that, but they always keep on talking of Krishna. He is the center of attraction. Like they say in film line, the only bad publicity is no publicity. Somehow or other, my name should be in print somewhere. Like one actress at a function, she told that this particular photographer over there is really annoying me. So her friend said, he's not even looking at you. He said, that's what is annoying me. So here, artificially we try to be the cynosure of eyes, we try to be the center of attraction. There is strong competition at the center in every field. On the circumference there is cooperation. Because there is nothing happens there. But at the center of any activity, there is strong competition for the post of dictator, for the post of the main person. And Braj is one place. It is the Vrindavan which we see, Bhauma Vrindavan, is in Prabhupada's words, a prototype. Like those who manufacture cars or other machinery, there's a prototype manufactured just to show people what the model will be like. So this Vrindavan is a prototype of what real life in Golok Vrindavan is. So this community is discussing so many things. And Yashoda Mai says, to tell the fact, me and my husband Nanda, we worship Lord Vishnu very, very nicely. That is the reason why, even though Putana Rakshasi came, my boy was saved. That's the real reason. I really feel it was a strong wind that broke the two Yamal Arjuna trees. She's convinced. And she says that I saw that last picture over there in this line is Govardhan Dharan Leela. You have Krishna lifting the hill and later some Vrijavasis also putting their sticks up. She says, in all honesty, it's my husband who lifted Govardhan Hill. It's a fact. How can this small boy do that? So we may say, hey, I know more than Yashoda Mai, you know. I know for sure Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. But Rupa Goswami says, don't make that mistake. This is love which is speaking. In that realm of love, facts don't matter. What is fact? So, Vatsalya Ras is such that you have to be situated in a realm, in a mindset where you want to protect Krishna. And therefore Krishna comes as, please protect me. You want to feed God. So God comes to you and says, I am hungry. Rupa Goswami mentions 9 kinds of people. He says, basically the devotees who are in Vatsalya Ras are of 3 kinds. Those who are in the capacity of Krishna's father or Krishna's mother or his teachers. So Nanda, Yashoda, Rohini, all the elderly gopis. For those of you who might have read Krishna book, there was a Brahma Vimohan Leela. Lord Brahma came and kidnapped. All these boys, their mothers, they had this deep, deep desire that it's so nice to see Yashoda Nandan. And I would like to have the same reciprocation with him one day. And Krishna became their son for 1 full year. Stole all those elderly gopis. They are also Vatsala Rasa Bhaktas. There is Devaki. And then there are the 15 other wives of Vasudev. Vasudev had 16 wives in total. Devaki and Rohini being 2 of them. One was also Devaki's sister, Devarakshita. Kunti Devi, she is also in Vatsalya Ras. Vasudev, of course. And among the teachers, Sandipani Muni is in Vatsalya Ras. So these are the main devotees who are described as having that strong, they relish this rasa. Rupa Goswami gives 2 verses describing Yashoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj. This is 10th canto, 9th chapter, 3rd verse. Kshaumam vasa prithukatitate vibrati sutranaddham putras nehasnata kuchayugam jatakampam chasubru rajvakarsha shramabhujat chalat kankanau kundalecha svinnam vaktram kabaravigalan malati nirmamanta. Kshaumam vasa,
dressed in a saffron yellow silk sari with a belt tied around her full hips, Mother Yashoda pulled on the churning rope. There is a churning rod. Nowadays, these items are relics of museums. But Bhagavatam still insists that real culture, real life is when you use this kind of machinery. So, there is plenty of milk, butter, lassi, chas, shrikhand, prabdi in Vrindavan. There is so much milk and butter, they throw it on themselves. They don't have pie fights there. They have fights with butter. So that butter comes when you protect cows. It's not available in dairies. It's not made from something artificial. So that's why we have to protect cows. So this small mechanism of churning butter, this is where Yashoda Mai did it herself. So she's dressed in dazzling saffron yellow silk sari. There is a belt, ornament belt tied around her hips. And she pulled on the churning rope, laboring considerably. Her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating. So her bangles were ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. It was the sound coming. Her whole body was shaking because she was ecstatic that this butter, which is this milk which is being churned, and this butter will be eaten by Gopal and he'll be very happy. Because of her intense love for her child, her breasts were wet with milk. This always happens. Anytime she would see Krishna, milk would flow. Her face with its very beautiful eyebrows was wet with perspiration. Prabhupada makes a very wonderful comparison here. Her hair is described as swinnam, black. So, Prabhupada says here, her hair was black like a cloud and perspiration was dropping like rain. And the malti flowers were falling from her hair. And this is what Prabhupada tells us. Anyone who desires to be Krishna conscious in motherly affection or parental affection should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yashoda. This chabi, this murti, this image, saffron silk sari, the white belt, her white hips moving, her bangles and earrings moving, her intense love for her child, her breasts flowing with milk. This is the image of Vatsalya Ras. Of course, we don't desire to become Mother Yashoda. That's Mayavar, Prabhupada cautions us. Devotees don't try to become someone. That's the position here in this material world. If you want to be happy, I have to be the boss. Like in that printing press in Japan, when you go, the courtesy or the protocol is that you give your card. So this Dai Nippon printing press, 6-7 people came and they all gave their card. And one officer remained for negotiation. And Prabhupada asked him, what's your name and what do you do? What do you want to do in life? He smiled. He took this stack of cards, his president, vice president, marketing, sales, production. He took those cards. Then he took out his own card and put on top of that. This is my ambition in life. There's only one post and I have to be that. So, do we feel bhakti also is like that? There are too many devotees now. There's strong competition, less space in Goloka Vrindavan. No! That can never happen. Can never happen. Krishna is unlimited. In fact, many times when devotees, we have to be in this competition mode because we are products of this, our mind is a product of this material nature. And that's like a, that's a big disadvantage. Krishna is unlimited. Krishna's desires are unlimited. And the resources available for fulfilling Krishna's desires are also unlimited. So here we have three things. The person whom I am trying to satisfy is unlimited. His desires are also unlimited. And the things available for uses in his service, they are also unlimited. The only thing limiting in Krishna consciousness is my own mindset. That scarcity consciousness is here.
Outside there, it's all abundant.
So devotees have a desire of becoming a servant of Yashoda Mai or servant of Nanda Maharaj. This is the chabi, or this is the image of Mother Yashoda. In another verse, Rupa Goswami describes the image of Nanda Maharaj. He's a Vaishya, he's a merchant. And he says his hair is black, but little grayish tinge is visible. He likes to wear garments which are greenish in color, like a newly grown banyan leaf, banyan tree leaf. He has a fat belly. Of course, he is a merchant. He can't be thin. A merchant has to be roly-poly. He should be seen as happy. Like Prabhupada was once telling, in Bengal, Prabhupada said, the standard of happiness is how much good rice you get to eat. So, you see somebody after a long time and you say, oh, you are really doing well, huh? Where do you buy your rice? Because you are looking well, your body is like nicely covered and in the proper places, and that means you should be getting some nice rice. So my question directly is, how do you manage to be so happy? How do you manage to be so fat? No, where do you get your rice? And as they were talking, a taxi came on the curb. The driver opened the door, he came out, and he was a big fat taxi driver. And suddenly, since he came in front of Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, where do you get your rice from? And he was like, huh? And the devotees were laughing. Ha ha. So Prabhupada pulled some practical jokes sometimes on at the expense of others. He didn't really know what to make of that. Rice. So Nanda Maharaj is a Vaishya. He has a complexion which is like the full moon. Very beautiful. And he has a nice little mustache, which complements his overall personality. To end with, Rupa Goswami finally, in that particular section, says, there is something called Uddipan. Uddipan, technically the word means to light a lamp. Deepa, Uddipan, which is lit. So Krishna, by his behavior, by his movements, by his appearance, he causes a particular kind of mood. Here, because we are Krishna unconscious in this material world, therefore it's not that Krishna causes that. It is the material nature which causes this mood. And especially these three modes of material nature. As Rukmini Devi says, they are the kings of this world. Like a king means he says, get up, hang him, release him. He does what his mind says. So people feel that they do what they want. Actually, it's a mode which is controlling them. In a lecture, Prabhupada said that somebody who is addicted to smoking is walking and suddenly he sees that big advertisement. And then these modes act is immediately within. Modes are like matchstick. And this world outside is like that coated surface of that matchbox. Two separate, no problem. But bring them together, and there is fire. So you see something, that particular mode awakens it, and Prabhupada is telling, go, go, get that smoke. I'm thirsty. My tongue is dry. Get that smoke. And when you take it, there is momentary relief. Practically that momentary relief is the cause of all problems. If there would be no momentary relief, you would be thoroughly frustrated. As the poet Vidyapati says, Tatala saikate, tatala, my souls are being charred, burnt on this blazing desert. Imagine a desert, midday, 12 o'clock, it's already hot, and every particle of sand is practically 70, 80 degrees centigrade. And you put a person there, he will be dancing. Practically, tatala saikate, what to do? And he wants water, cries, water, water, water. And there comes a big relief van, water for everybody, free water for everybody. And somebody comes with a dropper and says, your water? Yes, sir. What's your name? Write it down. Sign here, please. Says, one drop of water? That's all I get? He said, that's your quota. Tatala saikate vari bindu sama suta mita ramani samaje. Your children, your family life, your friend, society, your occupation, business, leisure, club, everything, all the total conglomeration, all that, adding all this together is one drop. It very much tastes like water, it reminds you of water, but where is the quenching of the thirst? So he says, Vari Bindu Sama, just one drop. While here, in this other side of reality, there it's a flood. Satyavrat Muni, he says, simple Krishna's Vatsalya Rasa Leela, Damodar Leela, Dam Bandhan. He says, Swaghosham Majjantam Akhyapayantam Iti Drikswa Leela Bhir Ananda Kunde. It's a kunda, it's a big sarovar, it's a lake of rasa, and Krishna takes every devotee and Majjantam. You are like drowning in rasa. You come out at rasa all over. It's all quenched. You're happy. Even if you squeeze your clothes, rasa comes out. Everywhere there is rasa. And that's what we want. It may be something we want, but it has to depend on somebody who gives it. And Krishna says, it's your birthright. You are my part and parcel. Giving, obtaining rasa is your birthright. Come and take it. So this International Society for Krishna Consciousness is like a everything revealed. You come, choose your rasa and be happy. All that it takes is just come here and choose. That's all. So I'll conclude with some nice ecstatic description of what are these Uddipans are. Rupa Goswami divides Krishna's age, Kaumara. Remember Prahlad Maharaj saying, Kaumara Acharit Pragyo. That means up to about 5 years. So he says, Adya Kuma Kaumara, Madhya Kaumara, Antya Kaumara. In the beginning stages of Krishna's Kaumara Leela, Krishna has to act like a child just for that. Like all cylinders get fired of Vatsalaras in everybody. He says, Krishna's thighs are fatty. As Krishna is a baby, is growing. His eyes are whitish. Little teeth are coming out. Not so much that they are full grown teeth. Krishna's smile is very mild, gentle. He's also very mild and gentle. There's a tilak on his forehead. Tiger nail. Talisman. Goes around his neck. That's for protection. You may say, he's supposed to be the God, Lord. What he needs for protection? No. Now no questions. Whatever a baby needs, a mother does, all that is done for Krishna. For his protection, for let Krishna be protected by Lord Narayan, and all these prayers. Sometimes we feel it's illogical, but now you understand. There's a love behind it. Slowly Krishna grows to Madhya Kaumara stage. His hair, which was very less, now has grown and it is somehow covering his eyes a little bit. He has a waist cloth. In the beginning Kaumar, sometimes almost no clothes, because like you know babies, they do things dirty or whatever. Krishna also used to do that. But of course, that urine is different. It is as pure as any of the purest of liquids available anywhere. So in Madhya Kaumara, there are little or less clothes. Sometimes Krishna is completely without clothes. Now he talks broken language. Kala Bhashana. In Hindi they call it Totli Boli. It's very sweet to the mother, father, all those nearby. Krishna's waist, which was fat, now is growing thinner. And his chest is becoming broader. His hair is becoming so curly, it is compared to crow's feathers. Sometimes you feel crow. Anyway, Everybody should have one credit at least. So the crow gets badly mauled in all other philosophical sections. But here at least, why some tirtham and crow-like people and crow-like literature, but at least in one section here we give a little bit of credit. He also is part and parcel, come on, of Krishna. There should be something that they should be proud of. So crow's feathers, specifically kaka paksha, Rupa Goswami is very specific. Then he has a stick in his hand, a small stick. Later, as he approaches Antya Kumar, the cloth now becomes longer, up to his knees. The waist cloth has a knot on it. Very sweet looking knot. Just like that. Expert pujaris, pujari expertise is decided on your knotting experience. And then later he carries a slender flute. And then he mixes with the other boys. And then the whole thing of mischief starts after that. So all these taken together, they invoke such a fire of vatsalaras that all these devotees, they just become overwhelmed. And the final conclusion is, he can't but be our Krishna. That's all. The boys come home, like a typical evening, they would give a report to their father and mother that, did you know what Krishna did today? And the father would say, oh really, what was that? And it could be killing a demon, it could be jumping off something, or it could be jumping off a tree, or imitating somebody. Especially if it is like a great heroic thing, the parents would say, oh, Krishna is wonderful. That's all, he is wonderful. Nothing more than that. Even the boys would never... So Vrindavan is a place where Krishna is not accepted as God. Just like the material world. But in a very, very different and sweet way. We would rather be there, right? Why stay in this place where they don't accept Krishna? If you don't want to accept Krishna, rather stay there. What is the problem? So Srila Prabhupada has so mercifully introduced this kind of understanding, this one drop of sweet rasa understanding can wash away centuries of philosophical misunderstandings. Otherwise, just wallowing in the mud of mental speculation and thinking in terms of maybe God is this, how can simple come from complex and complex come from simple, and precious human life is lost. While these devotees, just looking at the way Krishna's knot is tied, they become ecstatic. While our knots of material attachment, they keep on harnessing us to this chain of birth and death again and again and again and again. So, this is where I will stop. It's 10:30, I'm 10 minutes over time. And as I promised, there will be a series of nectarian lectures beginning with Gaurang Prabhu. Haribo. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.